Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wees.
Next question is for me. The Profit First book, you state that the owner's taxes should be paid by the business. And this is a hard concept for me to grasp. Of course, the owner's payroll taxes are paid by the corporation, but it seems that you're indicating that the end of year personal taxes shall be paid by the corp.
That's right.
This seems to be like just another W-2 payment to the owner incurring yet more taxes. What gives?
Yeah, Kevin, nice you caught me on a technicality. It's true that that money that comes out, you will incur tax on it. And it's kind of crazy because that's your tax account, right? But the government, first, let's look at it from the government's perspective. They don't know what you nickname your bank accounts. You could call it my gold mine. You can call it tax. You can call it any words. They see that as just cash. And how taxes work in the U.S., and actually I've traveled a lot now. I've yet to find a country that acts differently, is the money that comes out of a business, if you spend it on as an expense, you're generally not taxed on that because the entity that received that money, they're going to be taxed on it. The money that is given to the shareholders of the business or retained in the business, collectively could be considered profit, is taxable. So even though we allocate money to an account called owner's comp, that's a normalized salary for the owner, profit, which is different than a normalized salary. Profit is a reward to the shareholder for starting the business. And then the tax account, which is money reserved for taxes, all that money the government sees collectively is money that wasn't spent on expenses, therefore will tax you on it. So that's kind of how the government sees it. But the business still needs to reserve money in that account because you're going to have to pay your taxes. The primary reason I found that people start, actually there's two reasons people start businesses. The number one reason is because they're doing something that they feel is exciting, compelling, it gives them joy. The number 1.1 reason, I mean, it's up there, it's almost the same. The number two reason, but right next to it is financial freedom. So we start our businesses because we want to do something that gives us joy and satisfaction and control and something that gives us money. That's why we start a business. Yet one of the biggest bills associated with the operation of a business that entrepreneurs are never prepared for is the tax bill. It's usually the number one biggest bill associated with operating a business, and we get blindsided by it every year. Like, oh, I owe how much? What's going on here? So the business, and this is true regardless of your formation, you have S Corp, C Corp, LLC, LLP, regardless of your formation, the business can reserve your tax liabilities for you. Then when tax time comes, the business can pay the tax on your behalf in some cases, LLCs, LLPs. Other cases, it does what's called a tax distribution reimbursement to the owner. That's an S Corp, C Corp, and stuff like that. So you work with an accountant here, but the business must reserve the taxes. And no, it doesn't result in double taxation because you're reserving money for taxes to give to the government and they're taxing you on it. It's not double taxation because the government just sees money left over or money that's been spent.
So would you say that a better way of explaining it is that, you know, you're paid on a salary basis every month or whatever it be, and then come April where you're going to be taxed for 2019 for your personal income, the company is going to bonus you money from the tax account to you, which that bonus money will then be taxed in the 2020 return.
Yeah,
right.
That's okay. A great way. You should have written the book, damn it. Why did I do this? That's better.
Hey, you can put it in version 2, right?
Yeah, like, version 2. The update. By Gavin Dickinson. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if everybody really understands it this in detail, but yeah, I actually read it about 6 months ago, and I've been thinking about this question ever since.
So that's still a great question. It's a great way to see it, too.
Cool. So the next question is, as business owners, we all typically have benefits expensed through the corp, whether it be an occasional meal, home internet, whatever. A lot of us Amazon sellers, e-commerce entrepreneurs, we work from home. So there's actually like an owner's benefit to get like my internet paid by the business, right? So these are like considered gray area items. So we want to run the business as profitable as possible, but we also we don't want to leave these expenses on the table. We want to essentially run them through the business. It seems like some of us might run more than others. I call them like bullshit expenses, right? Like, yeah. Hey, I'm going to get a new sit stand desk, or, you know, is that on the business or the personal? And so one way I've thought about this is like, it's sort of like an owner's benefit. So yeah. What if I split out my expenses? If that's like sort of a gray area expense, that would then come out of the owner's
benefit. It's a great idea. So how we do it in the kind of the puritanical profit first sense is any owner benefit comes out of the owner compensation account. So we have an account we call owner's comp, which pays your normalized salary, but also any benefits the owner derives, that car you're driving around. It's an owner benefit, but since the business now will be paying for it directly, it's an expense to the business and it reduces your tax consequences legally. So that's where we can do it. But if you want to break out even further, that's a great idea. You can also do that. You know, Profit First, the foundational system, is based upon 5 foundational accounts at your primary bank and then 2 additional accounts at a secondary bank. But it's simply the foundational system. People that have implemented Profit First, we often find ends up with, you know, more accounts. It's not too abnormal to see 7, 8. We have one business at 20 accounts. And I know the bankers pull their hair out over that, but it isn't about the bankers. It's about our business. And if you can allocate money at your bank so that when you log in, you know its intended use before you spend it, you'll operate a much more effective business than otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. One strategy I've used is I have 2 different credit cards that I pay off every month. One is for like owner's benefit expenses. Another one is for like true company expenses. That's helped me like allocate and keep
track. Smart. That's smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Last question that I had. So e-commerce, right? I've been doing Profit First for about 6 months now. It seems like analyzing cash flow rhythms can be really difficult when you have like an e-commerce business, especially if you have a seasonal business.
Yeah, seasonal.
So we've been advised to push the profit allocation percentages higher on a monthly basis, but I'm apprehensive to do so until I can really observe a rhythm. And it's been like 6 months, but I've still like only tweaked them a little bit because the rhythm, it's like a seasonal thing.
Yeah.
How can we deal with this more effectively?
So I would look at an annual basis. I mean, there's no rush to tweak the numbers and optimize it until you see the entire year play out in a seasonal type business. But there is a hack. If you know when the seasonality is, so for many Amazon sellers that I'm aware of, it's the fall season as they prepare for the winter holidays that the most volume moves for, you know, with consumer purchases. So, you know, October is intense. November is a big month, December too. January sometimes too. And so what they do is they set up, so say it's those 3 months, October, November, December is the 3 strongest months historically. What we do then is we set up another account at our bank called the drip account. And when those deposits come in, it goes into our drip account as opposed to going into, which we haven't talked about the techniques, but it goes into income and gets allocated. The drip account is the realization that that money that comes in during that quarter isn't to pay for bills or maintain the business for a quarter. It's to maintain the business during the off season too. So when the money comes in, yes, we're gonna have direct bills associated with it. And we have to cover those, but then the gains from that drip out over the remaining 3 other quarters. So if say $10,000 came into that account, we wouldn't just allocate all $10,000 out. Or let's say $12,000, it's easier. $12,000 comes in, we don't allocate it out. We now carve it up over 12 pieces. So every month, 1/12 of that or $1,000 comes out into the business. So that $12,000 in that short period addresses the business for the entirety of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's also can be an argument that like your company should be profitable in the least likely month. So like February. Yep. Right?
I'm into that.
So the drip account, we don't want the drip account skewing it off so that it looks like, you know, what's really happening is December is really, you know, compensating for all remaining months. But yeah, I think that one thing that is interesting, the drip account, a lot of us, we have to place like big orders in like August, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, some of our biggest orders. And then it's it's not really realized until December or November.
Right. So you have that big gap.
And so
the wins in September or November or whatever, that's got to be reserved for the next August, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Q4 is big preparation time for, you know, everybody's like, I'm saving up for Q4 and I'm going to spend all this money.
Yeah. And so then, the funny thing, that's a good response. Like, we got to save it for Q4. The thing is there a deliberate mechanism to make that happen? So, with Private First, you can set up an account called the Q4 account, and every month of operations, you just start funding that account with a little percentage of the income coming in, preparing for the Q4.
I like that.
That's a really great way to think about it. I think that'll really help a lot of our listeners because that's a big thing. People are like, oh my gosh, I have to make this big order for Q4 and I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. I need to take on more debt. Can I get loans? And so if you're preparing for that all year long, it's definitely going to be helpful.
Yeah. This works in our personal finances. Like, say you need to buy a car one day and the car is, it's not a cheap car. It's 50 grand or something. You can start making car payments today.
Yeah.
To an account called Future Car. And now you're allocating, say, $500 a month. Well, every month you're allocating $6,000. Within 5 years or 6 years, whatever it is, you're going to be ready, So
you hear that, Amazon gurus? Start saving up for that Lamborghini now.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Don't buy a Lamborghini.
I'm going to have a separate account for the cash suitcase, right? Because if you have the Lamborghini, you have to have the cash suitcase open next to it to, put on that extra frosting.
I had a Viper for a period of time, and that was a very egotistical stage. I wanted to show my success and stuff. I now call that the winning trophy for dicks is the Viper, because I was just being a dick. And the other thing is, like, someone came to me, a guy came to me, like, dude, well, at least it's a chick magnet. I'll tell you what it is. It's a magnet for 13-year-old boys. To me, Lamborghinis and Vipers are off the list. No value in those.
I
was going to say, I've thought about taking some professional pictures with my Prius,
Cool. I'm impressed by a Prius. Yeah. I am impressed by that car. That's pretty freaking cool.
It's my second one.
And let me say this, I'm not busting Lamborghinis. If someone aspires to have one and stuff, just for me, it's no longer a fit. I thought it meant something to own a Viper. And a Viper's not a Lamborghini, I get it. But to own that, I thought it meant something. No.
And I think, we all talk about it. For every business owner, your Lamborghini might be something different.
Yeah.
Your Lamborghini might be that vacation home on the beach. Your Lamborghini might be, so we all aspire to do different things, but in the Amazon community, it's kind of a joke with
we deserve that. I think we should aspire to have those things. My mistake was I thought it meant something. Like, it was a mechanism to show how great I was. And I think if we procure stuff for that purpose, there's no value. But if it satisfies us, if it brings us joy, go at it. Totally,
Well, Mike, I'm excited to be able to ask you about Clockwork. I've read The Pumpkin Plan. I've read Profit First.
Thank
but
you.
Clockwork was a book for me that really changed a lot of things. I know one of our listeners, Stephen Black, is just commented on our Facebook Live, and he said, I was living like the lady in the first chapter of the book.
And that's a true story. Yeah.
And so, I think at first, the thought of leaving your business for a 4-week vacation where you are not allowed to work in your business or do anything, at first it terrified me, right? Because I'm like, oh my gosh, it's my baby. I can't just, I have to trust other people. Yeah. And then, the more I thought about it and the more I read the book and got your examples, I was like, wow, it's really freeing.
Yeah, it can be liberating.
Yeah. And so, I think how many of your readers reach out to you and struggle with the concept of implementing Clockwork?
Oh, many do. Many struggle with the concepts because it does require you to try something new, and it does challenge the ingrained mentality. So actually, I don't even like the word entrepreneur anymore. Entrepreneur was my favorite word ever because it speaks to who we are. The thing is, the definition of entrepreneur has been bastardized to someone that's hustle and grind. Like, you got to work your ass off. So people read this and they're like, but no, entrepreneurship's hustle and grind. And I'm like, that was never the intended definition. An entrepreneur is someone who choreographs the resources around them to achieve the outcome they have envisioned. It's not about doing the work. It's about organizing other resources, other people to get the work done to achieve what the vision is. And so that's why the Clockwork 4-week vacation is so important. When you pull that off, you've proven that the business can operate in your absence. For most businesses, we are in 4-week cycles, monthly cycles. We have to have bills paid. We acquire inventory with the stock. We have employees, part-time work, virtual help that comes and goes. You know, we have clients that are dissatisfied, clients are happy. All these elements happen. If we can extract ourselves from the operation of the business for four consecutive weeks, that means the business, the people that we have, or the processes that we use, or the systems, or the combination thereof, have to be the providers. And what I explain in the book is we need to make this declaration of a fortification and commit to it, but not tomorrow morning. Like, I don't, anyone listening in right now, I'm not telling you tomorrow, let's go on a fortification and see how your business does. That's probably a mistake. But what I am saying is a year and a half, maybe 2 years out from today, let's commit to a fortification. And you can do that. I know your schedule's open a year and a half, 2 years from now. Book it. 4 weeks. Non-negotiable. Tell your family, your loved ones, you know, that are going to hold you accountable to, because you're taking them on your vacation. And the goal here is not about some grand vacation. Do whatever satisfies you. You can go to your mother-in-law's and spend 4 weeks there. I don't care. But the key, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. The one thing you can't do is go to your mother-in-law's for 4 weeks. But what you need to do is now you have a mind shift. Now you can no longer say, how am I going to hustle and grind my way through it? How am I going to do the work? You're going to start asking, who is going to do this work? What technology or systems can I use to automate this stuff? Can I bring in virtual help? Do I need to hire an employee? But we have to start removing it from us. And as every day gets closer, the pressure mounts on removing ourselves from the business.
And I think that's so powerful, is because that 4 week vacation allows your mind to start shifting of, okay. And I think you have an example in the book of, you know, you talk about, what if you were to get sick, or what if something were to happen? And, you know, I use that a lot now when I'm coaching. I'm like, okay, well, what if you were to get sick? What if something were to happen to you or the main manager that runs your business, right? You know, you really need to be thinking about those things. But that's exactly what I started thinking about. Okay, if I went on vacation tomorrow, who would do this? And so I was able to slowly start kind of thinking about, okay, do I have a process for this? And the big other thing that you said in Clockwork that I loved was you talked about how, and you know, I spent a long time in the military, in the US military, in the Air Force, and we made a lot of continuity binders with processes in them all written up and everything. And so I thought I needed to do that in my business. And you gave me permission to not do that. And it was so wonderful because you were talking about, you need to write everything down and everything needs to be in these nice little binders and everything needs to be put on the shelf, right? And you're like, no, you're never going to actually use that stuff. It's going to collect dust. So that gave me permission to create videos, to do it one time, to really streamline the process. And that was really great. What would you say are the easiest and the most difficult obstacles in Clockwork for people to implement?
Well, the concept I talk about in the book, this concept of the QBR, or the queen bee role.
Uh-oh, I think we might have lost him.
Oh, no. So we heard the concept of the queen bee role. Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Yep.
All right. So I think the last thing that you mentioned, Mike, if you can still hear us. Oh, there you are.
I'm coming on a different device.
So you talked about the concept of the queen bee role.
Yes. Yes. And so it's called biomimicry. We take something from nature and we translate it into business. Here was the discovery, is that many people struggle with that. And the queen bee role is identifying the one activity within our business that drives the most benefit. In beehives, why I got the queen bee role is queen bees lay the egg, and the eggs allow for the survival of the colony. Now, the queen bee is not the most important bee. She just happens to serve the role of producing eggs. She's expendable, and if she's going to produce it, they will spawn a new bee. Well, in our business, there's a singular function. In every business, there's a singular function that's the most important function to the survivability and therefore the thrive factor of the business. We need to know what it is. And so a lot of people struggle with that. The example I encourage people to do is follow the example of Facebook, FedEx. FedEx promises to deliver packages on time. They do a lot of things, but their number one promise is to deliver packages on time. So step one for our business is, What's the number one promise or guarantee or commitment we're making to our customers? Then we ask them all the activities that we do, what most makes that promise a reality? So for FedEx, they have customer service, they have all these different things, but they also do logistics. And of all the things FedEx does, logistics is the most important thing to ensure packages get delivered on time. They could abandon their customer service department and just still focus on logistics. And there'll be some complaints that they don't answer the phones, but packages are being delivered. Conversely, they could say, screw logistics, we're going to focus on customer service. Yeah, they may be friendly, but no one knows where the hell the packages are. They're going out of business. And this is FedEx. What is our QBRs where people struggle? And yet that's one of the most important facets. So I just challenge people to think about what's the biggest promise you're making to the customers, and of all your activities, which one activity most delivers that promise? That is our QBR, and it must always be humming along. It can never be compromised.
And you must defend it.
Defend it.
Because that's what's going to keep your business running. So my question for you is, can you tell us what your QBR is?
Absolutely. It's writing books. And let me start off. My promise to my customer base is to simplify entrepreneurship. I make entrepreneurship simpler. That's my commitment. That's my promise. Now, I do speaking, you know, interviews, I write books. There's all these parts that can do it. But of all of those, what's the one most important? If I start writing like these really shitty books that don't work, the interviews, the speeches, all that stuff is going to start fading out very quickly. If I stop doing interviews, stop doing speeches, but I deliver exceptional books, I will continue to thrive. So I know my QBR is the production of excellent books, and every single day is protected and it happens. Nothing else supersedes that.
I love that example.
Very cool. Awesome. On another note, tell me why you decided to insert a link to anger management on your website.
Oh, anger management? That's funny, Kevin. Yeah, because some people like to surf around the website. I don't know if you ever see a movie, they call them goose eggs, you know, golden eggs or whatever. You'll see at the end of the movie, the credits are rolling by and people leave the room, but the few people in the know stay, and then they see that little final scene. Well, that's a very compelling way to serve your most engaged audience. So studying movies and how they operate, it's like, oh my gosh, my website needs to have these little golden goose eggs. So there's little things that are kind of, they're there, but they're not so obvious. There's a way, ways to pronounce my name kind of hidden away as a joke. There's that site says, if I hate Mike, you know, I hate Mike, and you click on it, it goes to anger management. And we've run the analytics. We've sent over 40,000 people to the anger management website, and they've never said a thank you note, never.
Did you take a class on being a comedian, or are you naturally just a prankster?
Yeah, I'm just a prankster. Just who I am. So I love to joke around. You know, Andy and I were talking before we started broadcasting. It's like, it doesn't resonate with everyone. Some people are like, oh, this guy's fun. He's cool. Other guys are like, this guy's a tool. And I get it. But it's just who I am. And I'm not going to live life, you know, try to be artificial. So just me.
All right, Mike. So we've got to continue with these important questions. Now, I need to know, what is your favorite flavor of margarita?
Oh, well, the classic margarita, which is lime based, but almost to what's called a gimlet level, which is just give me a fresh squeezed lime, a little or a lot of tequila and a little bit of ice. And that's pretty much it. Salt around the rim helps too.
Yeah. See, my wife, that's what my wife likes. And I hate classic margaritas, but man, you put a strawberry margarita in front of me and I'll destroy it. And I'll put my pinky up while I'm drinking.
Yeah, there you go, man. That's the only way to drink it.
Well, usually when we order it, when the server will come back, you know, they'll hand me the regular and my wife the strawberry. And I'm like,
I've been there too, dude.
I'm like, real man, get the strawberry. Come on, bring it over here.
Exactly.
and you also I noticed the little audio button on your homepage. I was cracking up before we came
that's
on.
Cool.
Yeah, that's epic. I love all that the comedy in your books and all the stuff that you do. The people who don't like it can expletive off, because I think it's epic and it really shows who you are, and I think that's why you have such a loyal following, is, you know, you're just
thanks, being Andy.
So the hair looks great, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, that's for my podcast. It's there. That's real hair.
It's working great. It's working fantastically. All right. On that note, we call this the gratuitous plug time. So tell everybody, you know, about your books. And I know you have a large catalog.
You're welcome to list them off or just mention the ones you want to. Tell people about your podcast. And you also have a ton, like this is, I want to thank you for this as well. You have a ton of free resources on your website. Like most people, they write a book and I love doing audiobooks, and I'll get to the end and I'll be like, well, now what the F do I do? I mean, I don't know where to go. I mean, being able to print those sheets out and actually go through and fill them out is epic. So thank you for doing that.
Oh yeah. My pleasure. So shameless plug. So the first place to go, maybe the only place if you want, is mikemotorbike.com. And that website has all my books. It has, I use it for the Wall Street Journal, has links to everything. And you can get it all in one click. So if you go to mikemotorbike.com and click on get the tools, just enter your email. I send it all to you in one shot. And you don't even have to subscribe. Like, I give you everything, free chapters of my books and so forth. If you feel compelled to pick up my books, they're, you know, local bookstore or whatever. I suggest Amazon because Amazon has the best pricing. Fix This Next is available right now, and I'm really encouraging people to check it out. I'm just super proud of the book, so it's kind of that. And then my podcast is called Entrepreneurship Elevated. So whatever podcatcher you listen to, just type in Entrepreneurship Elevated, and you're in for a different type of show, I think. It's pretty unique.
It's a fantastic one. All right. Last but not least, what's next, Mike? Like, do you have, what's your 5, 10-year, 15-year plan? Is it still writing books? Do you have any kind of like, do you do the Google like 80%, is your QBR 20% is your dabbling on the side? Do you do any dabbling or do you have any fun stuff and any hobbies, anything that, that you kind of get involved with outside of what you do day to day?
Yeah, I mean, for the future for me in regards to my business and stuff, the next 10, 20 years, I think till my final breath is writing books. I don't see anything else because I just love the impact it has. And I'm working on 2 new books right now. I have a hobby. I play guitar on the side, but that's definitely never going to turn into a business. No one wants to hear this guy sing. No one wants to hear me sing.
That's epic. All right, guys, we have a few more minutes. Yeah. Anybody in the live anybody on Facebook or on any of the live channels wants to ask a quick question. We only got a couple minutes. Mike's got to run to his next event, cause he's a rock star and we got to hold up our phones and
I'm a rock star minus the rock star part.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. You're a rock star to us. So if you want any questions, guys, quickly type them in. Otherwise we're going to let Mike go. Thank you so much, Mike, for coming on. I know your time's super valuable. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much for being here. And it was great, great chatting with you. And hopefully we can do this again. We'll wait maybe for another more couple books in the cycle so we can dig through them and stalk you, and then you can come back on and
I'd be honored to.
And we can grill you again.
Let me share that I'm wishing everyone that listened in today just tremendous success in your business. The world is starving for your success, so bring it. Bring your A game.
Awesome. Thanks again, Mike.
Cool. All right. Take care, brother.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank
and remember,
you, Mike.
Remember to subscribe, review, rate the podcast. We really appreciate that, guys. We are really, Amy and I, we were talking before this, we are going for moonshot guests. We're making a list of, people that, we think would be hard to get on. Like Mike was one of those. So was Neil Patel. We're trying to just get people on that we know are going to make a huge impact in your guys' business. If you guys have any requests or suggestions on that, let us know. But we're going to make our moonshot list, and we're going to, we're going to reach out and try to get all these great people on because, to get them to answer questions, not only just for general business, but, on an Amazon business, which is what most of us do in the context of that, works amazing. So thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, sellerseo.com and amazingathome.com.